The House Finance Committee will come to order. Secretary, please call the roll. Here.
Here.
Ranking Member Crowley, present. Representative Abrams, Chuck Flynn, Baldridge, Callender.
Here.
Trapania.
Here.
Carruthers.
Here.
Cross.
Here.
Edwards. Gambari.
Here.
Hoops. Hicks.
Here.
Leray has checked in. Liz has checked in. Patton.
Here.
Richardson. Romer.
Here.
Schmidt.
Here.
Stevens.
Here.
Stoltz.
Excused.
Swearingen.
Here.
Wilkins has checked in. Hicks Hudson. Howes. Durrell. Kelly has checked in. O'Brien.
Here.
Russo. Spindle.
Here.
Sweeney.
Here.
Troy. West.
Representative Abrams was here. We do have a quorum present, so we can start as a full committee. I will move the minutes from the March 10th and March 11th meeting. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Representative Patton. Okay. Any objections to accepting the minutes from the last two meetings? Hearing none, they become part of the record. I will now call up House Bill 76 for its first hearing here. There is written testimony There's written only testimony from the Industrial Commission Chairman, our good friend Jim Hughes. This bill has received two hearings in the Commerce and Labor Committee and was reported unanimously. It has been re-referred to the Finance Committee because of the appropriation under the House rules. Just very quickly, this bill is the Industrial Commission budget. Normally there is no opposition, and there is not this time. It's a $109.7 million appropriation over 2 years that funds 348 FTEs to run the program. As you all know, for the new members' sake, that this is an adjudicatory body for the Bureau of Workers' Compensation if there is a challenge. It does not receive any GRO funds. The operations are solely funded by the administrative cost fund surcharge and the workers' compensation insurance base rate paid by the employers. Compared to the executive version, House Bill 76 is passed by the House Finance Committee. It reduces the overall spend by 1.38%, or $758,730 per year. With that, is there any questions of this chair? With that, I will move that we favorably report House Bill 76 to the House Rules and Reference Committee. Representative Callender seconds. Secretary, please call the roll on House Bill 76.
Chairman,
yes.
Vice Chair Plummer.
Yes.
Ranking Member Crowley.
Yes.
Representative Abrams.
Yes.
Callender.
Yes.
Carpania.
Yes.
Carruthers.
Yes.
Cross.
Yes.
Gambari.
Yes.
Hick.
Yes.
Leray. Patton.
Here. Yes.
Romer.
Yes.
Schmidt.
Yes.
Stevens.
Yes.
Swearingen.
Yes.
House. Durrell. O'Brien.
Yes.
Spindle.
Yes.
Sweeney.
Yes.
West.
Yes.
Was it 18, 19? Having received the 19 votes, that's an appropriate number of votes to be sent on to the Rules and Reference Committee. The chair will keep the roll open for those who have checked in to 11 o'clock. The clerk's office says that I can keep the roll open to 11 o'clock. Please sign the report, everybody, before you will leave. Let me give you a rundown for the rest of the day. House Bill 167 is going to have a second hearing, and we have... Then this is the bill that deals with the utility and rent issue to allow those to receive funds to stay in their homes and pay their utilities. The chair has one amendment that I think everybody's familiar with, so I'll move my amendment, AM-0631. Is there a second? Second by Representative Callender. What this amendment does, it appropriates $100 million to the federal appropriation item COVID relief, specific to the COVID-19 emergency declaration. The Biden administration increased the typical 75% federal, 25% state FEMA match to 100% federal, backdated to January 1, 2020. The Ohio Department of Public Safety pending an estimated 2021 applications to total $145 million. The Ohio Controlling Board previously approved $45 million. House Bill 167 now will appropriate $100 million. So long as 100% matches in place, Ohio will likely have to appropriate additional federal funds so DPS can distribute the funding. That's what it does. I think, again, the members are familiar with that. Is there any objections to any questions on the amendment? Any objections to the amendment? It becomes part, therefore, it will become part of the bill, House Bill 167. We do have two witnesses, but the other two bills that we thought we might be voting on, House Bill 168 and 169, we will not be voting on. We will be listening to witnesses, but as an informal hearing, because they weren't referred to us by the Rules Committee. So I will now call up House Bill 167, and obviously we're not going to vote on 167 either. That's the only vote we just took for 167. And our first witness is Dan Acton, Ohio Real Estate Investors Association, to provide proponent testimony. If he's here. Representative Gambari, if you could check and see if he's out there. If he's not, we'll go on. That's the only live testimony we had today for this bill. Again, those of you that were here for the roll call or have checked in on 76, please sign the report. If you were not here for the roll call or have not checked in, you cannot sign the report under the House rules. No, he's not here? Okay. Since he's not here, I will point out that Jason Smith from AARP and Kyle Dreyfus Wells, Northeast Ohio Regional Sewer District, were also going to testify. Just so you know, we'll now move on to the two bills we'll informally hear today. Both House Bill 168 and 169 have received three hearings in House Economic Workforce and Development Committee and were reported unanimously. They will be referred to Finance because of the appropriation as soon as the Rules Committee meets again. Having said that, though, we do have, hopefully, our two colleagues are here. I will call up House Bill 168 for its first hearing. Representative Fraser and Loychek. So hopefully one of those folks are here to give sponsor testimony. Can I borrow your pen?
Loychek was here.
Loychek is here.
Okay.
He's in the hall.
Okay. If we can.
Fraser's in here.
Loychek is here.
Again, those members who were here for the roll call on the first vote or checked in may sign the report. If you weren't here for the roll call or checked in on House Bill 76 under the House rules, you're not permitted to sign the report. But we do have about enough votes to get it out. Are you solo or is your...
Solo today.
All right. I'll call you up. And why don't you give us a testimony, your sponsor testimony on House Bill 168.
Great.
Welcome.
Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, thank you for having me today to testify on this bill. 168 is a coronavirus relief bill. It appropriates $299.9 million in grants fiscal year 21. Any of that money that's not spent is carried over to fiscal year 22. In my portion of the bill, we have local fairs, child care, and veteran homes. The local fairs are appropriated $50,000 per fair. And then the veteran homes get $3 million, and the child care gets $112 million. Georgetown and Sandusky are the two veteran homes, and from there, Mark Fraser has the other part of the bill. So I don't know if we want to wait for him or... Yes, sir. Absolutely, Chair. Okay. Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you, Chair.
Also signing in to speak today, Chris Ferruccio,
NFIB
proponent testimony.
Just turn the mic on. Chris Ferruccio, NFIB proponent testimony. There he is. Welcome, young man.
Thank you.
Welcome, whenever you're ready.
Great, good morning. Thank you, Chairman Olslager, Vice Chair Plummer, Ranking Member Crawley, and members of the House Finance Committee. Thanks for the opportunity to provide proponent testimony on House Bill 168. As the chairman indicated, my name is Chris Ferruso, and I'm Legislative Director for NFIB here in Ohio. Grateful to Representatives Frazier and Lojcik for their sponsorship of this important legislation. By way of background, for those of you not familiar with NFIB, a typical member employs 20 or fewer and does less than $2 million in gross receipts. Our members come from all industry types in each of the 88 counties in Ohio, and they range in size from sole proprietors working out of their homes to large operations employing hundreds or even thousands. At the onset of the COVID pandemic, our team was fielding hundreds of inquiries from members seeking clarification on what steps they needed to take to keep their businesses in operation and their employees working. Unfortunately, many of our members were unable to remain open, or if they were open, it was either in limited capacity and or facing a substantial drop in customers and thus revenue. The swift, sudden onset of restrictions and attempting to comply with those restrictions quickly can turn to concern about ongoing viability. It became clear for a lot of our members that absent financial relief, they may be forced to lay off a significant portion of their workforce, or in the worst case scenario, permanently close their doors. I believe we can all agree the COVID pandemic had and continues to have a significant financial impact on so many small businesses. I want to share some results of a survey that we conducted of our members here in Ohio late last year on the impacts of the pandemic, as I believe it'll help set the stage for why House Bill 168 is so welcome. When we surveyed our members at that time, 77% of them, so more than 3 out of 4, had taken some sort of government loan, whether it was a PPP or an EIDL loan. And 88% of those who had taken a loan had used it up by the end of Q3 in 2020. 70% of our members said they would take advantage of a state program like the Small Business Relief Grant Program, which was moved through the controlling board late last year and obviously is supplemented in 168. At that time, 50% of our members had indicated a financial need of $25,000 or greater. And the greatest need obviously was for wages and compensation, and closely followed by utility costs, keeping the doors open, the lights on, the heat, air conditioning, whatever it may be. 30% of our members were required to close because of executive orders. However, 94% of them were opened within 3 months. 55%, over half of our members, experienced a year-over-year revenue loss of at least 20%. And 15% of our members experienced year-over-year revenue loss greater than 50%. Staggering statistics for small businesses. We know significant resources came in the form of loans from the federal government. The Paycheck Protection Program, PPP, was a lifeline for businesses not only in Ohio but throughout the country. Round one of PPP delivered over $18.5 billion to nearly 150,000 Ohio businesses with an average loan size of roughly $123,000. And as of the last day of February this year, round two of PPP in Ohio had brought an additional $4.85 billion to over 64,000 businesses with an average loan size of just under $76,000. As our members indicated, and as demonstrated by the large number of businesses that availed themselves of round two of PPP, the need for financial relief remains great. The state of Ohio also allocated resources late last year through the Small Business Relief Grant Program, proposed by Governor DeWine's administration and approved through the quick action of the controlling board, putting $125 million into the hands of many small business owners. House Bill 168 builds upon this program by providing an additional $150 million of grants to those businesses that had attempted to access that initial application process, but because of depleted funds were unable to secure grants. As the bill currently reads, it is just those small businesses that applied under the grant program by December 20th of 2020. We understand the intent is to get the money out to those small businesses who applied at that time and indicated a need for financial resources, and to do so as soon as possible. Certainly don't want to delay, as we know the fiscal year 21 is the time frame within House Bill 168. We also suggest, however, that there are businesses that may have elected not to apply because they knew the funds were depleted, and so they still may have a financial need out there. And we would suggest and recommend that the General Assembly continue to look in fiscal year 22 with the additional resources coming with the latest stimulus bill to see if there is an opportunity to open this program back up for those businesses who may foregone or elected not to apply because the funds were depleted. In addition to the Small Business Grant Program, We're very supportive of the new business grant relief program. It will provide $10 million in grants for businesses that open their doors after January 1, 2020. These businesses generally did not qualify for other grants or loan programs, as most required a demonstration of year-over-year revenue decline. And obviously, these new enterprises cannot fulfill this requirement if they opened in calendar year 2020. And just a sidebar, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I had a member from McConnellsville in Morgan County who called and said that he had spent the better part of 3 years renovating a building in downtown McConnellsville, saving a historic building, and put a lot of financial resources, time, sweat, equity, and energy into that. He had planned to open in March of last year, and obviously with the orders that came down, was unable to do so. And so he had to delay his opening until June of 2020. His business is down. He can't demonstrate a year-over-year revenue loss because he wasn't open in calendar year 2019. And so here's a gentleman who could has indicated he has an event space that, once he went through the protocols required for social distancing and all those other things, his reservations had canceled. And so he's left without customers at this time, or at least into late last year, and he's certainly down where he would have been. And so he would obviously benefit from this program. And so we're glad to support and glad to see that the General Assembly is looking to provide these businesses that took the risk in 2020 the opportunity to secure some grants. And finally, a separate grant program for indoor entertainment venues is welcome. We have members in this industry that were hard hit as a result of the pandemic, and on behalf of these members and all businesses in this space, we appreciate the special recognition in this bill. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, in closing, I want to reiterate how meaningful House Bill 168 will be to businesses. We, again, appreciate the recognition that small businesses are still struggling financially, and providing grants will assist the economic recovery for so many. Mr. Chairman, I submitted similar testimony on House Bill 169 in deference to the committee's time, and not to repeat myself. It's written only, but please know we are very supportive of that as well for our members in the bar, restaurant, and lodging industry. With that, I'll conclude my testimony, and I'm happy to try and address any questions.
Thank you very much. I was going to mention that you did have also written testimony 169, but you beat me to the punch. Any questions of the witness? Rep. Crawley.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Mr. Ferruzzo, for being here today and your testimony. I do have a question about your members who had applied for grants or for relief prior to December of last year who were not funded. It's just some demographic information. How many of your members were minority-owned or women-owned businesses who was not granted relief through other funding sources that would qualify under this?
Mr. Chairman, to Ranking Member Crawley, that is not information that we capture from our members. When we ask them, the only demographics we capture are employee size and industry type. We don't ask anything beyond that. I do know that we have a substantial number of women-owned enterprises, and I would suggest to you, because we don't know who all applied, we can talk to our members that the DSA may be better served, and I don't know if they captured those demographics either, but I would suggest, and not to put them on the spot, they may be better positioned to answer that question.
Representative Crawley, follow-up.
Yes, Chair, thank you, and thank you for that. And another question just about what you heard. So, yes, a lot of women-owned businesses as well as minority-owned businesses with the like the African American Chamber of Commerce or some of the other just women business enterprise groups were saying that part of the reason why they weren't able to secure funding is because they did not have like an ongoing relationship with financial institutions or that there was like this unfair system as far as, you know, being able to, you know, go through the application process and get, you know, awarded funding. Is that the same thing that your members reported to you as one of the reasons why they weren't able to obtain some necessary funding that they needed because they didn't have ongoing lasting relationships with institutions?
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Crawley, I can speak anecdotally, not on the Small Business Grant Relief Program provided by the state of Ohio, but at the initial onset and the offering of the PPP loans. Mm-hmm. We heard from members across Ohio that they were having challenges getting their applications reviewed for those PPP loans. And so, I would say it was across Ohio. The only thing we could recommend to them was reaching out to other lending institutions, although we learned early on, or we gathered, again, anecdotally early on, that absent a pre-existing relationship with a financial institution, our members seem to be bumped down in the queue. I think ultimately, most of those who wanted a PPP loan were able to secure one, but at the onset, it was a messy, cumbersome process. And let's be honest, this was thrown together quickly, and we're appreciative of the actions of Congress to do that. But there's no doubt about it that there were folks who just without a existing financial relationship with a financial institution had challenges getting it at the onset. But I think that's been alleviated. In fact, as I was sitting in the spillover room, I got a latest update from our research foundation. Proud to say that only 13% of our members now feel that if financial conditions don't improve in 6 months, they'll shut their doors. That's down from 25% in December. So it's trending in the right direction. But I also know that there is a significantly lower number of members who are still seeking PPP loans based upon that data. So my point there being, I believe that a lot of folks who wanted it have now been able to obtain it.
Representative Crawley.
Just one more follow-up, Chair. And thank you. And maybe I missed it in your testimony. So my last question to you is, with this new, once this legislation passes, which I'm pretty sure it would, how many of your members would actually qualify for this grant funding that you're testifying on today?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the representative, I believe if the criteria remains the same, which I believe was 25 and fewer, if I'm remembering correctly from the Small Business Grant Relief Program, you know, that encompasses probably 80% of our members.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Troy is next, and then Representative Brothers, and then Representative Gambari. Representative Troy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ferruccio, and maybe you might not be the right person to ask this question to. Maybe it would be the sponsors, but you indicated your support for the grant program for indoor entertainment venues, and I'm wondering why, or would you be opposed to including outdoor entertainment venues? A lot of them have been hard hit. I know in our county, I know Mr. Callender can relate to this. Our farm park would have the annual Vintage Ohio Wine Fest. Festival that was canceled. A lot of our minor league stadiums around the state have been were closed down during the pandemic. So I guess the question is would there be any opposition if somehow I was able to convince this committee to also include indoor and outdoor entertainment venues as eligible for this grant program?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Troy, as a Lake County native, I'm familiar with the farm park as well as the captains. No. To answer your question, absolutely not. We want to make, we are supportive of helping as many businesses as we can.
Representative Troy? Thank you. Representative Crothers?
Hi there, thank you for coming. Thank you, Chair. I have a question just to piggyback on Rep. Crawley's. When they're filling out a form for this loan and everything else do they have to fill out whether or not they are a black-owned business or a female-owned business?
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Crothers, I don't know the answer to that, and I apologize. I can get back through the chair to you. I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Crothers, that's all your question?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. Representative Gambari.
Thank you, Chairman. Good morning. Thanks for the testimony. I have a broader question for you, maybe even a little broader beyond the current legislation. I've heard from a lot of small businesses back in my district that have said, please stop sending federal dollars back for unemployment because we can't get people to walk in the door and even apply for a job. These are critical jobs in the district that pay great benefits. But the hourly wage is currently slightly lower than the $15 an hour minimum wage that essentially breaks down through the federal benefit program of $600 a week divided by 40. It's about 15 bucks an hour. So they have said, please stop sending money back here because we can't get people to walk through the door and apply for jobs. I'm wondering if you've heard about that from the folks that are part of your organization. And if you have any thoughts on how we can address that and encourage folks to walk into those doors and apply for those jobs, because those jobs are needed jobs in our districts, and they're producing goods and services that are needed, but they're going unfilled right now.
Mr. Chairman, to Representative Gambari, to answer your question, yes, we've heard from members who are who are frustrated with the inability to fill open positions or have folks return to work because of the supplemental PUA payments that have come from the federal government. I would suggest to you that some of the challenges are initially early on. One, folks, they were shut, so there were no opportunities, and so that additional assistance was welcome. But now it's kind of pivoted to, do we want to keep relaxing criteria in order to qualify for benefits? So, for example, should folks have a waiting week for eligibility? That may get to the issue of fraud that we're seeing out there, where immediate approval. Second, some of this PUA did go to individuals who were 1099s or sole proprietors who were eligible for the first time for unemployment. Are those folks going to continue to work for themselves, or would they be amenable to open positions? I don't know. But your point's well taken. That may be an incentive for folks to not return to the workforce. Other factors are eligible for the workforce, seeking work. Those type of criteria that are required for ongoing unemployment benefits, somewhat relaxed, could probably be restored to help alleviate some of that concern.
Representative Ghanbari, follow up.
Thank you, Chairman. And not to put you on the spot this morning, but I would ask, based on the thoughts that you just shared with us, is that something that NFIB, do you think in principle would be supportive of, maybe tightening some of those things that have been lax for the time being, or finding additional incentives to encourage folks to apply for those vacancies?
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Ghanbari, I wasn't prepared to talk on that this today, but I will try to address your question. The answer to your question is yes. So our members' second and third biggest concern, let's back out healthcare, been our members' number one concern for 30 years, it's not going anywhere, is finding skilled employees and filling vacancies. And so those are two top concerns, which tells us that our folks are ramping back up their operations. They're starting to return to pre-pandemic operation levels, and so the need to fill those positions is there. And yes, we want to be able to create an environment where folks fill those jobs, go to work, and help our members and themselves and their families.
Thank you. Other questions of the witness? Representative Crowley.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. So just to follow back up on what Representative Ghanbari was just asking, kind of pivoting a little bit to getting workers back to, or having people apply for open positions, and this bill has a relief for childcare. Would you say that, you know, one of the issues that maybe your members are facing in having people return to work or filling positions is, you know, access problem for childcare or reliable childcare, that, I mean, because we see that as a workforce problem as well.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Crowley, I don't have data on that I can share with you. I can't say yes or no, but certainly a concern for parents. I'm a parent myself, is finding childcare. My children can't be home on their own. Luckily, they're back in school. I'm glad for that. But probably a concern out there. So, you know, I know that's included in here, and I think that probably fits well in this overall package.
Mm-hmm. Representative Crowley?
Thank you, Chairman.
Other questions of the witness? Always good to see you, Chris.
Great.
Thanks for coming.
Thanks
in.
Thanks so much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
That will be our first hearing in House Bill 168. As I say, it's an informal hearing since the bill had not been formally re-referred to us. I'll now call up for its first hearing, House Bill 169, and Representative Swearingen to give sponsor testimony. And as the previous witness mentioned, he does have written testimony only in your iPad. Whenever you're ready, young man.
Thank you, Chairman Olslager, Vice Chairman Plummer, and Ranking Member Crawley, and members of the House Finance Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to give testimony on House Bill 169. You have my written remarks on your iPad, so I'll just give a brief overview of the legislation itself. House Bill 169 appropriates from the COVID relief funds at the federal government $125 million. $100 million are going to go to our bars and restaurants, who we all know probably suffered the most from the pandemic and its effects. $25 million are going to go to the lodging industry. The program is going to be administered through the Development Services Agency, and for the bars and restaurants, factors are going to include lost revenues, need employees, and for the lodging industry, the factors are going to include lost revenues and occupancy rates, which We all know, being in Columbus, the occupancy rates down here at least have been extremely low, as well as in other places. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Representative. Are there questions of the representative? Representative Gambari, there he is. Okay.
Thank you, Chairman, and Representative Swearingen, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I support what you are trying to accomplish in the bill. I'd be interested on your thoughts when it comes to the bars and restaurants that you mentioned. I agree with you as well that those are some of the most impacted businesses through COVID-19. But I also look at news headlines every week where some bar is being cited for something, and they are being told you can shut down for a couple weeks or you can pay this monetary fine. I'm wondering if there's any possibility of addressing those other programs. I'll just give you an example. My district, there was a bar owner that was finishing up for the evening, no customers in there, poured a drink for himself, and was cited for having a drink in a restaurant that he owns when there were no customers in there as he was cleaning up. And he was told, you can either pay this fine or you're going to be shut down for a while. So you have this aspect of enforcement coming in, and then you have the other aspect of us saying we need to give money and have these programs for these bars and restaurants. And I see the two of them as conflicting. So I support what you're trying to do, but I'm wondering if there's a way that maybe we can somehow make that sync up on the other end. So if they're getting money, that money's not then going out the other door, if you understand what I'm saying.
Sure. Chairman Olslager, Representative Gambari, I think, you know, there are obvious procedural appeal mechanisms that those individuals can pursue, and I know there's other legislation right now pending in the House to address some of those issues that I think would sync up well with this bill and the other bills going forward that are offered by Representative Marin and others. So your point is well taken.
And other questions to the sponsor? Thank you very much. That'll be our first hearing on House Bill 169. We will take up a second hearing after our break. Having no further business to come before us, we stand adjourned. And Representative LeRae, if you could come forward, that would be wonderful after the meeting. Having no further business to come before us, we stand adjourned.